capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome to this week's Level Talk programme. President Trump's recent visit to Europe has been called the least effective visit of any American president to Europe since the 1940s by somebody called Nicholas Burns, who's a former Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. After a G7 climate change summit, which Trump refused to participate in, Angela Merkel declared that Europe would have to take our fate into our own hands and could no longer depend on US leadership. Now, potentially, this cooling of relations between Europe, rather between EU countries and the United States, signals the greatest change in geopolitics and global security since the end of the last world war. The consequences are serious if policies are carried through. Joining this program to discuss how serious all of this is Professor Ian Begg, Professorial Research Fellow at the European Institute, the London School of Economics and Political Science, and Dr. Tara McCormack, Lecturer in Politics and International Relations at the University of Leicester. Thank you both of you for joining the program today. The dust is beginning to settle now after Trump's visit to Europe. In general terms, what conclusions can we draw? Professor Begg.
The first conclusion we can draw is that it's early days to be making firm conclusions, drawing firm conclusions about this, because Trump is an unknown quantity. It's his first encounter in this setting, in the agreeable surroundings of Taormina, with how the rest of the world does business. And it's pretty clear that on some of the big topics, he is very much at odds with what the European members of the G7 want. He is reluctant to endorse the climate change deal. We wait to see later this week whether he will in fact make up his mind on it. And he is adamant that the Europeans need to start paying more towards the defense costs of NATO.
Yeah.
There I think he has a strong point, because share of NATO expenditure paid by the US is 72%.
Yeah.
And many European NATO countries are barely over 1%, as indeed is Canada.
Yeah, so you're saying that perhaps it's not as serious as it seems to some people. Dr. Tara McCormack, do you agree with that general line that we should not take things at face value now? We should maybe perhaps wait and see what's going to happen and then...
I think I'd have several things to say. I mean, broadly, yes, I know that one of the things is, of course, we all want answers and we all want to know, especially in the field of international politics, what is going to happen, because it's important. You know, it's of sort of existential importance to all of us. But I think also it is true, as my colleague says, you know, it's very difficult to tell. Now, one of the really interesting, worrying things about Trump is that he has one consistency about Trump is that he has constantly changed and revoked policies.
Yeah.
Okay, so he, you know, as presidential candidate, he made a lot of statements about wanting to do various things in the international realm, you know, stabilize relations with Russia, for example, various other things. And we've seen kind of consistent turns, you know, but even in domestic politics, you know, threats to build a wall. And then, of course, it turned out he didn't really mean a wall as such. You know, so that is one thing I think I'd like to say about Trump, is that he demonstrates an unusual degree, perhaps, there's an unusual degree of uncertainty around Trump's policies. We also know that the American administration is totally divided. We've got Nikki Haley at the UN, who seems to be making her own foreign policy. You know, there was a sort of quite public telling off a few weeks ago, where the White House said to Nikki Haley, hey, you better run by us, you know, things that you want to say. So we know that the State Department is quite understaffed. You know, so there are all sorts of things going. The Trump administration itself, for a number of reasons, is quite unusual, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think there's
You can say that again.
Yeah. No, but I mean, even without talking politically, I just mean technically, you know, we're seeing. But I think the other thing I would like to say is that the comments that Trump has made, say, about NATO aren't really that different from things that Obama said and even Bush. I mean, they're different, very different in tone and presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of fundamental points about, say, you know, NATO allies not paying enough of the burden has been one that America has made for at least a decade and a half now. And I think the final broader point I'd like to make is that, in a way, I would see what's going on now in terms of the relationship between the EU and America and NATO and America. I don't think this is really, this isn't really the fault of Trump so much or a consequence of Trump, but I think really what we've seen are kind of a number of post-Cold War trends, which in a way are meeting, are coming to a head in Trump. So really what we saw actually kind of quite early on in the post-Cold War period was a real problem with American leadership. So, you know, you had the kind of end of the Cold War, end of really the sort of justification of American hegemony. You know, one can say that as in a positive way or a negative way. You know, and I think we really saw that playing out in terms of Iraq, for example, where we had a quite a serious bust-up at the time between Europe and America. Now, not in terms of should we intervene in Iraq, but, you know, how should we intervene? But there are actually some quite serious disagreements. We had a whole academic discussion, as Professor Begg will know, you know, about Europe as a normative power compared to the U.S. as a kind of aggressive, militaristic power. This is all in the early noughties, kind of post-Iraq. So, actually, the underlying trend has been quite a complex one in terms of, fraying would be too strong a word, but in terms of an increasingly problematic relationship, I guess, between the EU and America and NATO and America.
That's fascinating. Can I just say, it's fascinating what you're just saying. I hadn't thought of it like that. In fact, there are these deep-lying currents running. I mean, it seems to be threatening the whole idea, you know, the Bretton Woods Conference, establishment of the IMF, the World Bank, and all the other international organizations that were set up before Second World War, after the Second World War. But I guess that what you just said is fascinating for another reason, that Trump is such an unpopular man everywhere. Good reasons for it. But yet there is a case to be made that his policies are quite in line with this underlying trend of perhaps withdrawal, pullback of American power throughout the world. And that, of course, statement has all sorts of political connotations. But America maybe just can't afford it anymore, you know. I mean, maybe down to that, you know.
We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that Trump is an extremely inexperienced politician.
Yeah.
He only started out being a politician on the campaign trail. He's in no high office in the past, whether it's governorship or Senate, being a senator. And also, he brings a very distinctive individualistic and property magnet approach to it, all kinds of things, which is why he gets seduced by these simplistic notions that because Germany is a trade surplus, Germany is bad.
Right.
Or because China deals in potential currency manipulation, China is bad. It's a it's a view which lacks the nuance that many political leaders have. Now, it's true to say that there has been these large undercurrents going on, things that even Obama's pivot to Asia was a shift away from supporting Europe, potentially.
Right.
But what also underlies this is a sense that Europe as a whole maybe has hesitated to take its responsibilities in this new global context. What I don't think we're going to see, and this is where I think you exaggerated, is an unraveling of the global system. It's rather rebalancing of it, in which Europeans are going to be asked to take their responsibilities more comprehensively than they have in the past. And that's to some extent complicated by Brexit, because it means that Europe now is a redefinition, excluding Britain, at least from the European Union.
Yes, but will mean
a redefinition of Britain's role inside alliances like NATO.
I agree. I don't think we're going to see an unraveling of the international system, and that I think also there are very few international players, including Russia and China, who would want that. You know, there are no sort of large anti-systemic players, I think, really.
Well,
but I just want to say about the leadership, I think, absolutely. So Trump certainly presents a unique set of issues, problems, challenges. But don't forget, you know, American leadership, if people will probably recall Obama when he was presidential candidate going to Berlin, okay, he was received like a rock star because Bush was so unpopular for a number of reasons, of course, Iraq. And Obama's whole promise was, you know, re-legitimizing American leadership. So my only point is that, you know, this has actually been a real issue kind of for quite a long time. Trump, I think, is going to accelerate it.
Right.
But I think it would be wrong to understand that this is entirely a consequence. I'm not saying that any of us in this discussion are, but it is often, it's easy to make that leap. But, you know, we really do have, America has a real problem in terms of legitimating its leadership.
Perhaps the major point here is that this rebalancing of the world order, that it's probably not going to be a rejigger, or just as you said, Professor Beck, a rebalancing, and maybe it's a good thing. I mean, maybe Europe will sort of begin to be Europe in a sort of a bigger, a more meaningful sense. My question would be, is what's going to happen to the UK then? Because we used to be part of it, and yet we're in bed with America. You know, we have the special relationship. Is this all going to pan out quite bad for the UK, or is that, I'm just projecting my paranoia here?
I think the UK has always had this ambiguous position where it's had one foot in the American camp and one foot in the European camp. Britain is far more European than it is American. We have a similar kind of welfare state. We have similar views on many social issues. So I think that there is a model of British capitalism which is not that far away from that you find in many continental European countries, and is quite different from the one you find in the US. Britain also is, for a long time, a post-imperial power and doesn't have the capability to engage in the kind of hard military actions that the US is able to undertake. And that means, to go back to Tara's expression, that Britain, like the rest of the European Union, is predominantly soft power. It's its ideas, its norms that position it in the international system. And we're not going to change from that. Now, what's uncertain is exactly what kind of Brexit Theresa May, assuming she is re-elected, is going to negotiate.
Yeah. Well, we don't know.
I suspect that's something that's going to drag on for the next 2 years until we get clarity on it. But anyone who thinks that Europe is going to be divided and that either the Americans or the Russians are going to be able to divide and rule in Europe, I think overlooks the commitment that the European Union countries have to stay together to deal with things externally. They may muddle through and fudge a decision, but they get there in the end.
I think, as well, again, there are a few points. I mean, I think, first of all, in terms of the special relationship, now, America has many special relationships. You know, the truth of the matter is America's main ally, for wonder, the main special relationship in Europe, and I include Britain in Europe, of course. The Brexit or no Brexit, Britain is a European country, and I agree with my colleague, you know, economically, politically, culturally, you know, the EU doesn't change that. But, you know, the number one special relationship that America has in Europe is with Germany.
Right.
And I think, so, in that respect, I think this idea of the special relationship has been something more that we have liked to...
Yeah, we don't hear about that, though, a lot.
We don't in Britain, but that, I think that's a function of, you know, kind of our limited media discussions as well, rather than, you know, reflecting a political reality.
Right.
I think in terms of, say, whether this, you know, a lot of talk about how at the NATO summit, Trump didn't mention, you know, the collective defense clause, etc. And, you know, will this spur Germany to become the sort of European protector, etc.? I don't think any of that is given either. You know, we've had a lot of discussion within Europe about, you know, increasing European security and defense, but this has really, it sort of goes and fits and starts, you know, and then doesn't seem to come to much.
Yes, that's really interesting. Let's take a short break here.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Welcome back to Level Talk Program. Today we're talking about the widening political rift that is appearing between the United States and Europe. My guests this week are Professor Ian Begg from the London School of Economics and Political Science and Dr. Tara McCormack from the University of Leicester. May I ask you, could some European leaders be using the what seems to be rather rational behaviour of the President of the United States of America to beat the drums of the cause of putting directing more funds into creation of a European army?
I don't know. I mean, I think if one looks at Germany, there's quite an intense debate within Germany.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was Sigmar Gabriel was quoted saying quite recently, unless I'm mistaken, I don't know, Professor Beck, if you saw this, you know, actually it's not in Germany's interest to spend, you know, the amount on defence that America has asked of
it.
I don't think there is any straightforward drive in European countries. You know, we have, in many European countries, foreign policy is quite a contested issue.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I can't say, but it doesn't seem to me there's any straightforward, you know, path here that we will definitely see now a European army.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of resistance in national capitals to creating that. I think that in terms of even if we do leave the EU, which I suspect probably will happen, I imagine that security and intelligence cooperation will continue between Britain and other EU countries. I mean, this
right.
is still largely done at national level. And indeed, you know, many of the problems with security and intelligence within European states are actually to do with fragmented systems within specific states themselves.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's also worth pointing out,
it's not an interstate
mm-hmm.
problem often, but it's, you know, if we look at, say, Belgium, for example, you know, these are problems within the states.
It's interstate.
And again,
yeah.
I think Brexit.
There's another angle
to this.
Imagine
we will still play a role there.
May I ask Professor Speck to come in here, please? Yep.
There's another angle to this, which is that there are six European Union countries which are not in NATO for historic reasons
yeah.
mainly, and one, Germany, which is very tentative about engaging in military activity for very obvious reasons
right.
to do with the First and Second World Wars. Moreover, the whole European construction was about tying in Germany to a peaceful coexistence with its European partners.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have a very significant member of NATO in Turkey, which is not part of the European Union. So we do need to be aware of the institutional differences, which can get in the way of having a single coherent policy at European level, be it towards the Americans, the Russians, or even towards Britain. And also the fact that European integration has been primarily an economic project with a political undercurrent. And going the next step towards common defence is something that I think the majority of European countries are going to be very uneasy about and will prefer to leave much of that to NATO.
It almost sounds to me, Professor Beck, listening to what you're saying, it almost sounds to me that, you know, Angela Merkel is sort of using this this occasion, this visit by Trump, to sort of almost start her election campaign. Look, here I am, you know, I'm defending Europe. I'm got your interest close to my heart. I'm going to defend us from this wild American hooligan, you know.
Well,
is there something in that? Yeah, go
ahead. I'll let you into a secret. Angela Merkel is a politician.
Oh, I forgot about that. Right. I'm sorry, I forgot about that one.
I don't think that, you know, we saw this all sort of blew up actually a few months ago, you know, when Trump was elected, where there was suddenly a flurry of sort of
yeah.
fears around, you know, the end of the American-led international order and will Germany now take on the mantle of leader of the free world. But I don't think necessarily that is a desire either in Germany,
yeah.
Again, for a number of
right.
historical reasons,
right.
as Professor Baker said. So,
change the subject slightly now. As Trump seems to be linking terrorism to immigration, and you could say that that was one of the major, you know, foundations of his election campaign. What is Europe's attitude to American reluctance to do more about refugees arriving from Africa? I know this subject has sort of gone off the boil and we don't read about it so much, but it's an ongoing subject, isn't it? I mean, Americans' reluctance to face up to the fact that refugees are arriving all the time and that linking that issue to terrorism. What's Trump saying now? Now, how's this going to affect Europe? Any idea, anybody?
I think my take on that would yeah. be that it's a global problem. We have, according to the United Nations agencies, more than 60 million displaced persons in the world.
Mm.
He finds huge concentrations in countries like Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan of Syrian refugees.
Mm-hmm.
there's a huge problem there that nobody has found the solution to.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans have been more accommodating. The Serbs have accepted large numbers of Syrian migrants almost by default because they've become stuck in their country. But it's something that needs a global response. The US is conflating, I think, refugees with economic migrants because they clearly have a concern about the large volume of Latino migrants coming into the US. They're not refugees in the conventional sense.
No.
They're economic migrants.
Yeah.
And many of those crossing the Mediterranean, similarly, are economic migrants from sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that is a dimension of globalization. There isn't an off-the-shelf solution to it.
It's a global problem.
It is, yes.
And as Donald Tusk, you know, said, that it demands a global response.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I think that before Europe or the EU is, and I include again Britain within that, becomes too self-righteous, really, we need to look to our own border policies. You know, for example, the number of people who are dying, drowning regularly in the Mediterranean. Again, I don't think there is any clear, you know, there is no, as Professor Beck says, off-the-shelf solution here, you know, because the fact is that within many European states, it would be virtually impossible, or it would be a very unpopular political move
mm-hmm.
to open up national borders, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or to do as Germany did. But, you know, we also need to be aware that European EU policies are resulting in thousands of people drowning as well in the Mediterranean. So I sort of not really don't have that much sympathy for too much moral grandstanding, you know, from a European perspective against America.
Yeah, I mean, and to me it leads on to the possible weakening of international institutions, of the actual effectiveness of the United Nations and all the other international aid bodies. And the United States seems to be moving direction of questioning whether these institutions should exist at all, you know, which doesn't really help us in Europe, is it, very much? If we're looking for a global solution, we need to have some sort of way of administering such global solutions. And all we have are the institutions that were set up after the Second World War, such as the United Nations, the League of Nations, continuation of that.
No, I think that would be an unfair categorization, because the weakness of the United Nations, in many ways, stems from the five permanent members of the Security Council wielding the vetoes, and Russia and China are just as guilty of that as the US is.
Sure. Okay, so it's a structure.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I was just going to say, you know, we have that discussion, that whole debate and discussion about the UN, you know, does it need reform? Again, that's been a sort of staple policy and academic discussion for, you know, more than 25 years. And absolutely, we cannot, again, lay that at Trump's feet, even if we'd like to. I mean, you know, the UN, the role of the UN in terms of conflict resolution has always been fairly, what can you say, patchy.
Yeah,
I guess.
And I guess, going back to the subject that we talked about at the beginning of the program, Professor Begg mentioned that President Trump is a businessman. What truth is there in the allegations that perhaps President Trump's attitude to Europe is that he couldn't set up his businesses in the way that he wanted to? And it pissed him off. Excuse me, I shouldn't say that on there. He got annoyed the fact that he couldn't make as much money in as short a time as he would have liked to. And his attitude to Europe has suffered because of that. And that might change, though, mightn't it, in the future? This whole thing is just impossible to understand. Help.
I think there's probably a somewhat facetious comment to be made about this, which is that Trump's most influential advisor is the last person he spoke to.
And when
that occurs,
mm-hmm.
you see an explanation for some of the vacillations in his policy that Tara was talking about earlier. He doesn't have what appears to be a strategic view. He's reacting to events all the time. And this is in stark contrast to leaders of other countries like Angela Merkel, like Vladimir Putin, who have a very strong vision of what they want to see. But at least to some of us, the views that are being espoused by some of those other leaders are not great ones.
Not great ones. Finally, just finish off the program. Let's try and wrap it up. So US-Europe relations, are we really looking at an impasse opening up, a vast impasse, you know, of problems? Or is it all going to just blow over soon? And we're making a lot of hot air, and politicians are making more out of this, perhaps, than they should be for personal gain. Just very brief, a minute each, please. Can I start with you, Professor Begg?
I think we may see a rather rough period, but in the end, they will recognize that their common interests exceed the reasons for division.
Yeah.
And while there might be some friction around things like paying for NATO or particular trade relationships, I suspect in the end they'll revert to the norm of post-war British, American and European relations.
Fair enough. Dr. McCormack, please, your summary.
Yeah, I really don't know. Because I do think that this, what we're seeing now, is more a continuation mm-hmm. of a long-term trend rather than, although I think Trump is pushing it along. But a lot depends also on who comes after Trump, of course.
Right, because these things take a long time. It's not next week, is it, or 2 weeks?
You know? Absolutely. You know, who comes after Trump? You know, and also, it's very difficult to tell from a European perspective. I don't think we're fully grasping the kind of new Cold War mania that has taken hold yeah. in America, in particular, where, as the book on Hillary's campaign, Shattered, has made it clear, the sort of blame Russia. Now, again, I'll say this on Sputnik. I would be quite prepared to accept that Russian agencies, you know, were behind the sort of fishing expedition for John Podesta's email, but quite prepared to accept they're not as well. But, you know, did this sway the election? I would argue firmly no. You know, Putin didn't win it for Trump. But my point is, there's something actually separately is going on in America. And the sort of end of that path is very, very unclear, because we have a whole half of the political establishment that seeks to argue that, you know, our politics are now controlled by a hostile external power. And that,
right.
is very, that I think that is going to play out in a whole number of different ways. I don't know the end of it.
Yep.
But that to me is kind of a real unknown. And we need also to think about American domestic politics as well, in terms of how our future relationship will play out.
Keep an eye on Macron, because he is going to
right.
be transformative in the core EU relationship between Germany and France, and his influence may be greater than we're recognising so far.
Okay, so thank you very much indeed, Professor Ian Begg from London School of Economics and Political Science, and Dr. Tara McCormack from the University of Leicester, both of you for being so open and fascinating talking to you. Your opinions are similar, and yet they're tantalisingly different. You know, and thank you very much.
That's
listeners.
Called sitting on the fence.
Well, perhaps it is, but it's really useful for us listeners, and me included, listening to you to understand the nuances and what might seem like a slight difference, in fact, is hugely important, hugely significant. So, sitting on the fence or not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, listeners, for being with us today. Goodbye.